You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah! So we got mean tweets, hater tweets coming up at 3:30 today.
Yeah.
I'm dreading this.
Looking forward to those.
I've seen some of them. They are no fun for me. And, yeah, made the wrong bet last night. It was a great Lakers game. It was they came from behind, and LeBron was unbelievably dominant with a triple-double. He just keeps doing the all the LeBron stuff that we've seen him been doing. He is an unbelievably talented, ageless star who – just last night, 40-plus minutes. Same with the Detroit game on Saturday, double overtime game. Played 40-plus minutes. Last night, triple-double. Get great contributions from, like, Dennis Schroeder, who is just – are they going to sign Dennis Schroeder long-term? There are rumors that they might.
Yeah, I think they're working on it. I don't – you know, obviously, I don't know.
You don't know. Yeah, it's just
if they're going to sign him or not. But, yeah, I think they'd like to. That's my understanding.
He's great. And Harrell is great. Kuz actually is really – Kuz has especially become a good rebounder and defender.
Yeah, he didn't have his three last night. He really struggled from the field, but he's finding ways to impact the game. He's also playing great defense, Kuz.
Yeah, really good.
Probably
really
the best
good
defense of his career. He was only 5 of 16 from the field last night, but he had 10 rebounds. He had 2 blocks. I mean, he's really making a – he's reinvented his whole game.
Yeah, he really has. And when he starts – like last night, and he didn't have a shot last night.
He didn't start last night.
Oh, they didn't start? Who started?
No, Markieff Morris.
Oh, that's right. They broke the 9-man rotation thing.
Yeah, and they played Wesley Matthews, and he was critical. And but Kuz impacted the game. He just didn't have his jumper.
Yeah. KCP made that one mistake at the end of the game.
Yeah, and they'll
the
play same two teams tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at Staples Center.
All right, same thing that happened in Tampa a couple of days ago is going to happen in L.A. at SoFi Stadium a year from right now. And joining us right now is the COO of the Los Angeles Rams, Kevin Demoff. Kevin, how are you, man?
I'm good, but I hope not the same thing, because I was hoping we would be hoisting the trophy, not Tom Brady. So
that's a good point, Kevin.
Correct.
Different outcome.
Well, the way we could spin that is we could say – home team, the team that plays in that stadium,
yes,
hoisting the trophy at the end of the Super Bowl. That's how we get around.
I can work with that.
All right. Hey, by the way, Kevin, I'm curious. The answer to this may very well be, I don't know, but I'll put it to you. How do you prepare for an event the size of the Super Bowl when you don't know if you'll have full capacity? You know, Florida, they let some people in. I think they had 20,000. We still don't know what the virus is going to look like a year from now. Do you just plan on, okay, everything will be normal in a year and let's go that way and then peel it back? Or how do you address planning for an event where you don't know what the rules will be?
Well, it's a great question. And I think it starts off, we have an amazing host committee, Casey Wasserman, you know, and the work he's doing with the Olympics, Kathy Schlossman and her group from LA Sports and Entertainment Commission. All are planning. I think it starts with you plan for a full SoFi Stadium with 75,000 people there to watch the Rams in the Super Bowl. And if things change, God willing they won't, then you adapt to that. But, you know, our goal is that this is truly the first post-pandemic event that people can plan on it, they can enjoy it. All of Los Angeles can enjoy the full week leading up to it, and that this game will be the true first post-pandemic event in the world.
You know, we got a tour of SoFi Stadium. You were good enough to let us have a tour of SoFi Stadium a couple of months ago, and it is so spectacular. And every time I watched a game and we were at home, the Rams were at home, it just made me so – I was so itching to get in there. And I thought, you know, it is – the timing is, you know, really terrible because the stadium opens the year all this is going on. And it must be frustrating on some level for you.
You know, it was disappointing. Obviously, you know, there are far greater issues that have happened in the world over 2020 than just not being able to get into SoFi Stadium
right
fans. But, you know, there were definitely moments throughout the year when you missed that energy. And, you know, I remember you know, certainly walking away from the Patriots game in, on Thursday night in December thinking what an amazing experience that would have been to have fans in the building. I think there were games, you know, the 49ers and the Jets game where we maybe a little bit flat, where the crowd would have picked you up right away and brought you that energy, you know, and you felt that throughout times this year throughout all stadiums that, you know, it just wasn't the same without fans. But, you know, silver lining, we got to play a year in the building to learn it a little bit, and so that the fan experience will be even better when they come back in September of 2021. And, you know, we have a good football team. Hopefully next year will be a great football team. You know, so I think all of those things are silver linings, but it's disappointing, but you can't control that. And, you know, if we can get the virus under control, it'll mean a lot more for this city and this country than just opening up SoFi Stadium.
Yeah. We're talking to Kevin Demoff, the COO of the Rams. And you just mentioned it, Kevin, that you guys had basically a year of dress rehearsals to get ready if and when fans are allowed in there. What'd you learn? Is there anything? I mean, when we were blown away when we got to go in there. I mean, it's the nicest, and I've obviously been in stadiums and arenas all over the country, so have you. It's the nicest facility I've ever seen, and nothing else is close. But I would imagine once the game started, there were probably a couple of things where you went, oh, I didn't think of that. Does anything come to mind when I bring that up?
Yeah, certainly. There are little things, you know, railings obscuring some seat views on an angle that you didn't predict.
Yeah.
You know, so once you actually sat in the seats and, you know, we would go around and have our staff sit in different seats throughout the game to see if their angle was blocked. You know, certain concession stands that maybe, you know, the one people lined up, it didn't work the way you thought, how they would come in and leave the game. There are lots of little things that we learned in trying to put our staff through, you know, game day paces that will make the experience better for our fans when we come in. All the big stuff, I think, that you guys saw on your tour remains unbelievable and will blow fans away, from the food and the concessions to the video board to the entryways to the palm trees. Everything about the stadium is so unique and wonderful. But there are lots of little things that you want to get right before fans walk in, and we would have certainly heard from fans on some of those issues, you know, after the first game, so hopefully we solve some of those. And look, at a stadium of 3.1 million square feet, there are always going to be things you want to tweak. And that first event, when we truly get...
We lose him?
Might have lost Kevin.
Okay.
Sounds like we lost him.
Yeah, all right.
He's back. Sorry about that, Kevin. We lost you for a second there.
No problem. I'm on a landline. That's an amazing feat.
Yeah. That's crazy.
I was going to say, nothing works, Kevin. It's a pandemic. Nothing works in a pandemic.
So, Kevin, you might have heard this. I'm a huge Rams fan. Hashtag Rams House.
No.
I was not aware of that, but it's good to learn new things.
Yes. So I look back at this season, and the fact that we got as far as the divisional playoff, I view this season, we didn't win at all, but I view it as a success. How do you view this season?
Oh, I think first and foremost, you have to give an amazing amount of credit to the NFL, to the Players Association, to everybody who got a season that was fully played, right? If we had this conversation, you know, last spring, the thought of making sure we could play every game, no games canceled, and have, you know, the players' ability shine on the field is an amazing feat. So I think the fact that everybody got through a season makes it a successful season. I think then for the Rams to get to the divisional round and to go to Green Bay and to be within one score without a healthy Aaron Donald, without a healthy Cooper Kupp, with the quarterback coming off of thumb surgery, I think is a great feat to build upon. We were one of the better teams in the league this year. We beat the Super Bowl champs in Tampa. You know, that was one of the better games we played. We knocked the Cardinals out of the playoffs. We knocked the Seahawks out of the playoffs. There's a lot of good things that came from this year. Is it up to our standards of getting to a Super Bowl? No, and I think you see that, you know, in the way we approach the offseason, the way we approach every year. But I think there's a lot to be proud of with the way our team, our coaching staff, our building, Reggie Scott and his crew handled the pandemic. To make the divisional playoffs in a pandemic year, I could not be more proud of the organization as a whole.
Kevin, and we're talking to Kevin Demoff from the Rams. I want to ask you a question, not necessarily as the COO of the Rams, but as somebody who has spent your entire life kind of working with live events. You know, Mason and I have been to every imaginable live event. What's going to get us back into live buildings? Obviously, SoFi being one of them. Do you sense it's after everybody gets vaccinated? What are you hearing? I know you're constantly in contact with health and safety officials. What's it going to look like when all of us get to go to live concerts, live sporting events, the types of things you would host at SoFi? What has to happen before we can all get back to that?
Well, obviously, that's probably a better question for medical experts, but here's what I can give you from my perspective. When you look at other countries watching the Australian Open at night and they have fans in building, you watch in New Zealand and they have full stadiums for rugby, some of those countries that aren't fully vaccinated, right? So there are ways, once you get the infection, their job, wearing masks, socially distanced, you can get stadiums back without being fully vaccinated. I do think the steps hopefully we take as a nation, you know, over this year by people wearing masks, by being distanced, by being, you know, prudent with their behavior, by not gathering in large groups, along with a relative vaccine to where you can get, you know, to where either 75 or 80% of the country has either had the virus or had the vaccine. I think at that point, you'll start to see buildings come back, especially outdoor buildings. But I think it's up to us as people who put on live events to make sure they're safe, to make sure that you can have digital tickets, you can pay cashless, that everything you do is contactless, to limit those points of spread, to give people that confidence to get back to events, because part of it is just people's confidence in getting back out. And I think once you see that confidence return, you're going to think quickly, because I know everybody is ready to get out and get about, and hopefully we can get schools open, we can get people back to work, and if we do those things, then we'll get people back to Rams games.
Okay, last thing for you. I put out yesterday on Twitter and on Instagram and all that stuff, who should be the halftime performer at our Super Bowl here in Los Angeles? And invariably, the name that came up the most was the idea of Snoop Dogg doing the halftime show with everybody he's ever worked with. Do you have any input into this? And what would you think of Snoop leading the halftime show next year?
So I have no input into the halftime show. I think that's a disclaimer. The two things that I get asked the most are halftime show. So, you know, we can work on both of those. Snoop did the intro video for the Super Bowl. If you go to the LA Sports and Entertainment Commission and the Super Bowl host website, and it was on social media today, Snoop narrated our 90-second video welcoming the Super Bowl back to Los Angeles. I think Snoop is an LA icon. I would love for Snoop to be involved in the Super Bowl. Hopefully the Super Bowl people will figure out the best way to put him where it can be. But I would say, you know, the last time the Super Bowl was in Los Angeles, Michael Jackson was the halftime performer.
Ooh, wow.
I think that tells you how long it's been, 29 years, but the level of performers that a Los Angeles Super Bowl can generate. So I know the NFL will have great choices. They'll come up with great ideas. And I think you're going to see L.A. shine at its best come next February.
All right. Hey, listen, Kevin, congratulations.
Thank you, Kevin.
On all this. Excited for a Super Bowl here in Los Angeles next year, and we hope that we all get to be there with you. Thanks for coming on.
Mason will be in his seats cheering on the Rams, and maybe next month we'll talk about who on the Rams might be playing in that game.
All right. Good.
Good.
Good. We'll do that, man.
Awesome.
Thanks, Kevin.
Kevin.
All right, there's Kevin Demoff, COO of the Los Angeles Rams. And once again, because of stupid rules, we're not allowed to talk. He's not allowed to talk about Matthew Stafford. But the idea of Matthew Stafford leading the Rams to the Super Bowl, Rams right now are 12-1. That is the third best bet on the board for teams in Vegas, teams to win the Super Bowl. It goes Kansas City 1. Kansas City's the lead, the first choice. The second choice is Tampa Bay, and the Rams are tied for third. So 12-1, the Rams going to and winning the Super Bowl next year, which
in
is
their own building,
exciting.
Which would be.
Yeah.
And by the way, let me say again, I've said it before. Professional sports is entertainment for fans. It's entertainment. The fact that we all know Matthew Stafford is coming to the Rams, and nobody at the Rams is allowed to talk about it. Not Sean McVay, not Kevin Demoff. This is a loophole that Roger Goodell and the NFL need to close. It's not unique to football. Last year, Michael and I had to go off the air for a month because we couldn't say the words Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Professional sports and commissioners should realize, hey, it's exciting when guys change teams, and you want to be able to share that with the fans and talk
and
about it.
And instantly react.
Right. And those loopholes need to be closed. So I hope somebody's on that.
Yeah. All right. Coming up next for you, baseball has made a very interesting decision for this year, and I wonder if it's the right one. That is coming up next for you. Yeah.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Yeah. What's going on? Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for being out there. We appreciate you. Without you, we would not be able to do this dumb show every day. And, John, baseball has done something interesting. We've talked about, first of all, if you missed this, they are going to be doing, once again, seven-inning doubleheaders, which
Love
I think
it.
Is smart.
Yep.
They're also doing the runner on second base thing in extra innings, which I hated as a weird novelty act, and as it turns out, became very, very dramatic. Anytime I heard somebody went to extra innings, I immediately wanted to watch because there's no guarantee that runner's going to score, and it was interesting to see how managers approached using that. So I'm excited about that. But after years of fielding questions about record home run rates and variations in its baseballs, Major League Baseball has informed its 30 teams in a memorandum on Friday of changes to the balls and how they will be handled. For the 2021 season, chief among the differences will be a slightly reduced weight and slightly decreased bounciness, the latter of which could reduce home runs. Now, we have set home run records in five of the last 6 years. They are essentially trying to tilt something a little bit more in the favor of pitchers. Is that smart for baseball?
It's the opposite of smart. It's really stupid. Baseball fans love home runs. They love the long ball. And pitchers will find a way to get guys out. They'll still be great pitchers in baseball. But Mace, who wants to go to a game with no home runs? What are they doing? Use the exact same ball they used last year. Why would you mess with that?
Well, here's the interesting thing to me. So right now, it's home run or bust, right? Guys go to the plate, they're swinging for a home run. If a home run is not guaranteed, we're more likely to see doubles off the wall, which actually creates more action on the base paths. Sometimes, a home run is basically, weirdly, a rally killer, right? You hit a home run and the inning kind of ends. In the case of making this ball a little less bouncy, we might see more doubles and triples as opposed to home runs, and that actually results in more action on the field.
I would not do anything to intentionally decrease home runs. Like, one of the really fun things is I went to a game last year, and there were 8 home runs in the game, 5 by the
right.
Dodgers and 3 by the other team. I thought it was great. We were on our feet the whole game. It was awesome. And it's home runs are something that the average person can't do. I'm against anything that reduces home runs. And this clearly is designed to do just that, right?
It is designed to, keep the ball in the park.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, see, right now, I think what's weird is if you go back to the World Series and you go back to the playoffs, and I got to go to the World Series this last year when the Dodgers won, it was hard to hit home runs. They made it hard. They used a different baseball during the playoffs than they did during the regular season. Home runs in the World Series were actually down. Home runs during the regular season were up. So clearly, does that make sense? Does it make sense to use a different baseball? And I'm speculating here, but the numbers bear it out. Does it make sense to use a different baseball during the playoffs than you use during the regular season?
No. What are we doing here? I think that they should absolutely do – last year worked. They got a good season in a pandemic, and now they're going to tweak it? I don't get it.
See, I think baseball has become too much strikeout or home run.
Well, do you think that has anything to do with the ball?
Yes, because guys know they know if they tag it, they don't have to tag it that hard to hit it out of the yard.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So that's why batters are basically home run or bust. Lindsay, what do you think? You're a big baseball fan.
I think that everybody likes to watch home runs, and baseball was never more popular back when they had the home run slugging fest between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa.
Sure.
So I think the more home runs, the better, and I don't think they should try and do anything to the ball to try and prevent them from happening.
See, I disagree. I want more action in the game. I want more doubles. I want more guys stretching a double to a triple. I want more triples. I don't think the ball has to leave the yard every time somebody steps to the plate. And right now, you know, it really is home run or strikeout.
Right, but
not as much action on the field as I remember from when I was a kid.
If it corrects that and does what you think it's going to do, that's one thing. But I'm not convinced that that's going to stop people swinging for the fence.
Even if you know it's not going to leave the yard, it's not a guaranteed home run.
I guess we're going to find out, right?
Yeah, we're going to find out. Absolutely. We're going to find out. It's interesting that they're doing it. 877-710-ESPN. I just don't think it should always be home run or bust. One thing I meant to mention, we mentioned earlier, the Pecota projections have come out, which are eerily accurate predictions based on all kinds of statistical analysis. And it's unbelievable how close they are when they predict the number of wins for teams. So if you go to the Pecota projections, right now the Dodgers are forecast to win more games than any other team. They've got them at 103 wins. The other teams in baseball with more than 90 wins, again, according to the Pecota projections, the Yankees are at 97. The Mets are at 95. The Padres are at 95. The Twins are at 90. And the Astros are at 93. So those are, according to the Pecota projections, the teams that will win the most games in this coming season. And again, they tend to be right. They tend to nail it to a really high degree. They get within a couple of games every year. And I think it's interesting. They've got the Dodgers at 103 and the Padres at 95. They're actually calling for there to be a little race. San Diego added Blake Snell. They added Yu Darvish. They've still got Chris Paddock, who's developing. They've still got Dennelson Lamet, who had a really good year last year. And, of course, they got a young ascending slugger at shortstop who finished fourth in MVP voting. I think the Padres will be tough to play this year. I mean, I think the Dodgers will be impossible to play with our pitching staff.
Well, I expect a race. I mean, I think the Dodgers are going to win, but I expect it to be a race. I don't think the Padres are going to – I think it'll be similar to last year. I wouldn't be surprised if they met in the playoffs, would you?
No, not at all. I would not be surprised to see the Padres in the National League Championship Series. I would not be surprised to see the Mets in the National League Championship Series. I think those are the two teams that the Dodgers got to watch out for, is the Padres and the Mets this coming year in the on the National League side.
Do you have all the teams in front of you?
I do.
Where did the Rays come in?
They've got Tampa Bay at 86 wins, trailing the Yankees at 97 wins.
So they think they're going to drop off considerably.
They've got the Angels at 87 wins.
Huh. What about Oakland?
They've got Oakland at 79 wins. They've sort of had to sell off some guys this year to keep payroll.
Yeah, but they
sell
off guys
every year. So they've got the Angels running second. If these hold up, the Angels would be a wild card team.
I don't know if they have the
Mike Trout in the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't know if they have the pitching to pull that off.
Be good for the game, getting Mike Trout into the playoffs. All right, coming up next for you, we've got our mean tweets.
Yeah, see, I look forward to these.
I dread them.
Yeah, why are you getting? Are you thin skinned?
No, I think that I think you get off scot free. I think most of them come after me.
We're going to find out, right?
Yes, we're going to find out next. Mean tweets, and then Game of Games. Don't forget at 3:55, our newly configured afternoon show with Sedano, LZ, and Cap is coming up. So make sure you're here for that. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, all you got to be is mean. So we get mean tweets, hater tweets all the time, and we collect those. And then once in a while, we have Amanda, Boss Amanda. That's kind of ballsy when you think about it. We're having our boss read these
things. Yeah, see, now I like these things, I think, more than you and Lindsay do. I want to sprinkle them out through the show all week, and you guys want to kind of just dump them all into one segment. But let's see how this plays. And if it goes, I think these will be funny. You're dreading them, right?
I'm dreading them. I think I get killed. I think you get off scot-free.
Let's find out. Yeah, let's find out. All right, Jorge, hit the first one.
At Garden Grove Gremlin, I was born in 2002. You were doing this show way before I was born. I'm Gen Z. You're Gen Old. Hashtag Jurassic period.
That's a great hashtag.
No, see, that's directed at both of us, and it's funny.
Hashtag Jurassic period.
I think that's fine. I'm glad
that's
that guy's found
clever.
Us.
Yeah, all right. I didn't think that one was that bad.
Okay, Jorge, right. What's next?
At Gala 805. At Venice Mace is such a hater of greatness, while at the same time thought Jared Goff was elite.
Such a hater of greatness. I think they're talking about Tom Brady.
Yeah, you were very down.
Did I ever think Jared Goff was elite?
Oh, yeah. You were arguing for a long time that Jared Goff was elite, right?
Yeah. I mean, there was a point where he was. Don't you think that in 2018 he was elite?
Well, it depends. Like, that one night against Kansas City at the Coliseum, he was unbelievable.
Yeah.
He was elite that night. The problem was with all the other games.
But that 2018 season, I would argue he was elite. He led,
right.
he
the
led
problem
that team
was,
to the Super Bowl.
All the rest of us noticed that he had dropped off of the elite level, and you kind of stayed there with him.
Yeah, he did fall apart, and I was there for
you're loyal.
While.
You married yourself to
loyal
Jared Goff.
To the kid.
That was it. All right, let's hear number three.
At literature underscore lover 2022. I'm a teacher. You're setting a terrible example for kids. You have no idea how to use the expression John and I or John and me. Do some homework. Didn't they teach you this at Bowling Green? They should take back that diploma. You should be ashamed of yourself.
All right. Now, I get this all the time also.
Yes.
So this is not just a criticism directed at you. Every time I say Steve and I or me and Mason or Mason and me, to be honest, I know there are rules. I just talk.
Yeah, me right? too.
I don't know. Now, Lindsay, do you know the exact rules of grammar? Is it Mason and I, me and Mason, Mason and me? What is it?
It's Mason and I, always.
But what about
if I
want to use...
Sometimes it's Mason and me.
What if I want to use me?
No.
If I say listen to... I would say listen to John and me.
Or what if I said...
That's correct.
What if I said... you know, we talked about this last week. Me and Mason got into a debate. Is that wrong?
No, that's wrong. Yeah, it should be Mason and I. Yeah, I mean, I think they're interchangeable. Look, lady, teacher lady,
it's
wherever you are.
It's literature lover, remember?
Literature lover lady.
22.
Yeah, and by the way, what you talk about, I'm glad I don't have that class. That teacher, that teacher's like a little brutal, don't you think?
I want a literature lady to come on and talk for 3 hours and get everything right, okay? Seriously, this is not grammar school.
Hey, teacher lady, I don't remember that in ESL.
Jorge, what do you think it is? What's proper grammar in that?
I think it's John and I.
I think I talk real good.
it's always should be John and I. You should always default to that because most people don't know. There's like very rare instances where you can use, you know, like the whole technical explanation for using John and me or Mason and me.
What? Wait a minute. But there's sometimes that just doesn't sound right. Like Mason and I went to the store. Is that right? I think it's Mason and me went to the store.
I looked this up. This is correct. So... I sent out a podcast, the Culture Pop podcast today, and it's with the guy who produced Queen's Gambit. And listen to this. Executive producer William Horberg joins Venice Mace and me to talk about the making of the series.
That's from Sue?
That's from Sue.
I think that's grammatically correct. That sounds right to me.
Venice Mace
and Lindsay,
me
But Lindsay,
correct.
You claim that is incorrect, right?
Well, I mean, there's different ways because there's it's like the first person pronoun thing. So it depends on who the subject is. And in this case, I guess she says joins Mason and me. I guess
that
I
sounds
guess
right to me.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Well, that movie Marley and Me, right? Is that correct?
Marley and me.
Yeah, it's not called Marley and I.
Exactly.
Yeah, sometimes it's correct. And maybe literature lady. wants to come in with her little red pencil and grade us every day. But I'll tell you, she's going to find more grammatical errors than just John and I or John and me.
Yeah, that seems weird. All right, what? How many is that, George? Three?
It's three, yeah.
All right, we got four more. Hit the next one.
At Yanez2413. The way Mason complains about everything, it feels like he's the Paul George of 710 ESPN.
Oh, that's a great one.
Oh, God.
That, yeah, that's cool.
Do I come across as a complainer?
Yes.
I don't think I do. I come across as, like...
I'm a glass-half-full guy. You're a glass-half-empty guy.
That is true, and that's why we compliment each other.
Yeah.
But somebody's got to be, you know, somebody's got to be fiery and take stuff down and go after stuff, right?
Yeah,
that's
why not?
That's not complaining.
Yeah. All right. Oh, George, what's the next one?
At Tommy 16. What qualifies at Venice Mace to even be on the radio? I saw the Mace plant. He's definitely not good at sports. I think he just makes stuff up and changes it later. Hashtag oops, can't say that.
Now, actually, I think this guy just kind of summarized sports radio in general, not just with you, but with anybody.
Yeah.
Number one, you don't have to be a great
athlete
to be on the radio. And number two, of course we say stuff and then pretend we got it right later.
Right. That's our job, is to say stuff and then change it later. That's what we all do. Are you not catching on to this? We make predictions or say things that we think are real. And then at the end of the day, if they're wrong, we just take the other position. They did with John Kerry. What did they say?
Flip-flop.
Right. But you can change your opinion based on new information, like the Jared Goff thing, for example. He was great in 2018. I said he was elite. I would argue that he was elite in 2018. And then he became not elite. He became a mess. So based on new information, I changed my mind and said he wasn't elite, and I'm glad Matthew Stafford is here.
All right. I have an update here. All right. This is from Bruno Mercury.
Okay.
It's whether the pronoun me or I can be used independently and the sentence would still make sense. Listen to me makes sense. Listen to I does not. So listen to Mason and me is correct. See? We're not that bad.
Yeah, here's Maria Fisher. Sometimes using me is correct. It depends on the usage in the sentence. You would not say join me on. You would say join me on. You wouldn't say join I on.
Right.
So there are definitely times when.
Okay, but that's completely irrelevant. Join I on. Nobody's talking about just join I. Like, you're talking about.
But
John
join
and I.
Join John and
I.
Me is correct. Join John yeah. and me okay. is correct.
Yeah. So it's not always. But Lindsay, you thought you always use I.
No, I said that. That's kind of like the rule. Like the rule when you don't know, you always use I because it's super specific as far as how you use it.
All
I think join John and I sounds, that sounds,
that sounds wrong.
John and me. No, I think they both sound fine.
All right. Well, Jorge, then,
but to you, they're interchangeable. There's definitely grammar rules. Ask Literature Lady.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, but again,
Literature Lady 2020 or whatever the hell
there are instances. There are instances where you can use both and they both make sense.
Just say join us. That's it.
Join us. Thank you, George. That makes
Won't
perfect
you?
Sense. All right.
The
well, you got
the better.
George, you have two left or three left?
Three left. Here it goes.
Three left. Hit one.
At Granted LA, Steve Mason trashing Tom Brady is like Smush Parker trashing Kobe Bryant.
You remember Smush? One time, Kobe said something bad about Smush Parker, and they go to Smush, and Smush said, "Well, who is Kobe to say that about me? What does he know?" We're like, "Yeah, you probably don't want to take that tact here."
Yeah, my position on Tom Brady, for the guy that says I changed my mind later, I now begrudgingly admire Tom Brady.
Yeah,
I did go off on him during the run up to the Super Bowl, and I still think he cheated on Deflategate, but I have changed my position to begrudgingly admire.
I'm starting to think that Deflategate thing was basically a witch hunt.
I don't think.
Oh, yeah. Did you guys hear about... There's a whole documentary that recently came out like a month ago about how it really is just a witch hunt. And there's no evidence that the balls were ever deflated.
Well, then where did it start?
Wait a minute.
There had to be evidence.
There had to be evidence.
Just listen to me. Watch the documentary. And that's all I'll say.
All right. How can I? Where can we find the documentary?
Well, let me look it up. Hang on.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
Jorge, hit another one.
At JokerLA760. You're the Jared Goff of radio. You had a chance. Now ESPN should move on from you.
Which one of us is that person talking about? We both have had chances and then moved on.
The title here says Mace.
Okay.
Oh, God. See, I told you I get killed on this. You don't.
Well, I think that some of these get both of us and some get you, but the ones that get you are funny. All right, what's the last one, George?
At SoCalKid24, I used to like listening to The Big Show with At Venice Mace and At LA Ireland, but I was 12, so the juvenile humor appealed to me. Now Mason and Ireland is like two senile uncles arguing at dinner, one stoned, both somehow wrong.
That kind of sums up the show.
That's my favorite one.
That's a great one. That's a great one. Oh, I think Morales is going to have a field day with some of this stuff.
That was great.
Yeah.
All right, keep them coming. Twitter at Venice Mace, Twitter at LA Ireland. The meaner the better, and we'll have Greg and Amanda read them.
All right. Coming up next for you is Game of Games. All right, here we go. It's Game of Games time. By the way, in the month of February, I'm actually leading the pack. I've won 3 times. Ireland has won twice. Jorge has won once, and Lindsay has yet to scratch, as Stu Lance would say. All right, the game today is Size Matters. Oh, yeah, it's brought to you by Power Pro Plumbing and Heating. Powerful, professional, affordable. It's who they are. It's in their name. They are our plumber, and they want to be yours, too. Call 1-800-584-4116 or visit powerproplumbing.com. All right, the name of the game is Size Matters. Size Matters. So, John, you can play.
Excellent.
Lindsay, you can play. And Jorge, you can play.
All right.
Very simple. Here's number one. The Empire, what is taller, the Empire State Building in New York City or Trump Tower in New York City? What's taller, the Empire State Building in New York or Trump Tower in New York, Ireland?
I am going to say Trump Tower.
Trump Tower. Lindsay?
I'm going to say the Empire State Building.
Empire State Building. And Jorge?
Empire State Building.
Empire State Building is the correct answer. Actually, it's not even close. The Empire State Building is 1,250 feet tall. Trump Tower is about half that, 664.
Yeah. Wasn't that like at one point one of the tallest buildings in the country?
Yes, it
come
was.
On, Ireland, get it together.
Yeah, get it together.
Let's
Ireland.
See if I come back.
All right. What's taller, the Eiffel Tower or the Seattle Space Needle? What's taller, the Eiffel Tower or the Seattle Space Needle? We start with Lindsay.
I'm going to guess the Seattle Space Needle.
Seattle Space Needle. Jorge.
Seattle Space Needle.
Seattle and Ireland.
I need to catch up, so I'll go Eiffel Tower.
And you're smart that you did. The Eiffel Tower is 1,063 feet tall. The Seattle Space Needle, only 605 feet tall. All right, two quarterbacks here. Who's taller? Niners quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe former quarterback, or Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill? And I will tell you, it is close. We start with Jorge.
Tannehill.
Tannehill. John.
I think it's Tannehill.
Tannehill. And Lindsay?
I'm going to say Jimmy G.
Jimmy G is the wrong answer. Ryan Tannehill is 6'3", and Jimmy Garoppolo is 6'2".
Wow.
All right,
close.
Here's number four. What's taller, the Statue of Liberty in New York City or Big Ben, the clock, in London? We go back to John for the start. Big Ben or the Statue of Liberty, what's taller?
Big Ben.
Big Ben. Lindsay?
I'm going to guess Statue of Liberty.
Statue of Liberty. Jorge?
Big Ben.
Big Ben is the correct answer. It is 316 feet tall. The Statue of Liberty, 305 feet tall. Ireland has won three. Jorge's at three, and Lindsay's at one. So it's a very close race.
Me and you, Jorge.
And
let's go.
What happened, Lindsay? You were talking, okay. Man.
Yeah, Lindsay talked trash and then sank like a rock.
It's usually how it goes.
What's taller? There are two more of these. What's taller, the Golden Gate Bridge or Mount Rushmore? The Golden Gate Bridge or Mount Rushmore? Lindsay?
I'm going to go with the Golden Gate Bridge.
Golden Gate Bridge. Jorge?
Mount Rushmore.
Mount Rushmore, Ireland.
I'm going to go Golden Gate Bridge.
I'm sorry, Ireland. You went wrong. Jorge has taken a lead. It is Mount Rushmore. Not even close. Mount Rushmore is 5,720 feet tall. The Golden Gate Bridge is only 746 feet tall.
Okay, Jorge, if you get this, you beat me.
Let's go.
Okay.
Right, you have to go first.
Yep. Who is taller, Jeff Bezos or Tom Cruise? Jeff Bezos or Tom Cruise? You go first, Jorge.
Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos, Ireland.
But he guessed Bezos, so I have to guess Cruise.
Cruise. And Lindsay?
Well, for fun, since this doesn't count,
yeah,
I'm
going to
guess Bezos.
Bezos. The correct answer is Tom Cruise. Whoa! 5'7". Jeff Bezos is 5'6".
Oh, my gosh.
That was a very
was
intense celebratory scream.
Oh, we're tied.
So it's Ireland 4, Jorge 4. Let me do one more here.
This is a tiebreaker, right?
Yeah.
So Lindsay's out of it? Okay.
What is taller, the new World Trade Center building or the tallest building in Los Angeles, the U.S. Bank Tower? Let's start with Ireland.
Okay. Let me think this out.
And it's very close.
Boy, the new – I don't know how tall the new World Trade Center – now, does it count the spires?
Are they do.
Counting? Okay, then I think –
that is part of the U.S. Bank Tower.
Would they both have a spire, you're telling me? I'm going World Trade Center.
World Trade Center. Jorge.
Well, I'll go with the one in L.A.
Jorge, you could have tied it by saying the World Trade Center, which is 1,079 feet tall. The U.S. Bank Tower is very close, 1,018 foot tall. Ireland wins the game.
He's hey, now Lindsay, got get it together, will you?
No, Lindsay.
I know,
happens.
I'm trying.
Yet to scratch, Lindsay. Yet to scratch.
I know.
Wait, but there's a newer building in L.A., the Intercontinental Tower.
Yeah, but that's not the one he asked
for. Yeah, that's not the tallest. That's not the tallest.
You should have compared both new buildings. Come on.
Wait, you're complaining about the game? You got to play the game as it's.
Hey, why don't you do a game, dude? You don't do any games. Yeah, you just sit here and play them.
Whatever. By the way, Lindsay, tomorrow's Lindsay's game. So if Lindsay gets shut out for the month of February, do we call – Do when somebody gets zero, do we change it to a Lindsay?
Oh, it's absolutely a Lindsay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, right now it's a Mason. Then I was going to say, yeah, Mason is the one that you did, what, 2 months in a row you didn't get one?
He didn't get one for December, so it became the Mason.
It became the Mason. Went from the Curtis to the Mason. Right now it's the Mason. And
if
Lindsay,
you are shut out in any game, it's called the Mason because
you are
shut out.
Performing a Mason.
Having that conversation 9 days into the month is a little premature.
Let's see.
We will see.
Let's see. Tomorrow's your game, so you can't win.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to do something very unprofessional and ask Jorge, what is the out time?
No, it's 52:30, you already said.
Oh, okay, 52:30, got it.
Yeah.
Don't forget the big afternoon show's coming up with Sedano, LZ, and Cap. We should circle back to the story of the day, which is technically, which is officially LeBron James and the triple-double last night in an overtime win over Oklahoma City.
All right, so here's the thing that jumped out at me about that. LeBron, well, first of all, he played 42 minutes, but he didn't have his three-pointer. He was just off. He's been great all year shooting threes, 40%. Last night he was 2 for 10, all right? But then you look at his total stats. He finishes 11 of 22, 50%, which is great, 4 of 5 from the line, 14 rebounds, 12 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. So even when he doesn't have it, and last night he didn't have his three, he still impacts the game more than anybody else. And that's why he's the best player in the league.
And, you know, we talked about it a little earlier, but it's so interesting the parallel between LeBron James, who is in his 18th season, age 35 season, and absolutely dominant, in my opinion, the best player in the league, the most valuable player, and Tom Brady, who is 43, and going to and winning the Super Bowl on Sunday. Actually, LeBron James, follow me here, Jorge. LeBron James talked about that last night after the game.
You know, him go out and do the things that he's done, you know, in his career. For him to win another one yesterday in the fashion that he won, it was pretty cool. It was very inspiring for a guy like myself. Two different sports, two different positions. I don't know how long I'm going to play the game. You know, I don't know how much more I'll be able to give to the game, but you know, the way I feel right now, we'll see what happens, but I have no timetable on it. You know, I have no, no year of, okay, do I want to play till 30 this or 40 that, you know, the game will let me know, when it's time and, you know, and we'll figure it out then.
There you go. Thank God it's not even close to time.
I was going to say, you just ignored the clock, didn't you?
Yeah, we're
this is not a hard out, guys. This is not a hard out.
Well, then why did you ask him what is our out time?
Yeah. Because we're supposed to get close to them starting at 3:55. Yeah, all right. All right. Got it.
See you tomorrow.
Up next for you is Sedano, LZ, and Cap. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 12:55. We will try to be on time. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.